Hey, it's Eric G. Around the House is sponsored by Baldwin Hardware. For 75 years, Baldwin Hardware has been known for its first-class quality and craftsmanship in door and cabinetry hardware. As an alumnus of the Baldwin Hardware Design Council, I can say I have seen the details and quality from design to the finished product. If you're looking for a new style and old-world craftsmanship, I can tell you there is only one Baldwin Hardware. Check out what would look great in your home at baldwinhardware.com. Support for Around the House with Eric G is brought to you by Manscaped, who's the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. They obsess over their technology developments to provide you the best tools for your grooming experience. Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. We have an exclusive offer today for my listeners. 20% off plus free shipping with the code DIY at manscaped.com. Now, Manscaped hooked me up with a bunch of tools and formulations from their Perfect Package 3.0 kit. Manscaped has created the best hair trimmer ever, the Lawnmower 3.0. Their third-generation trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin-safe technology. In addition, this trimmer comes with an LED light for more precise shave and is waterproof to make your shower shave clean and easy. Now, of course, you don't use the same trimmer you use on your face. That's just nasty. The Lawnmower 3.0 comes inside their brand new Perfect Package 3.0, which comes with everything you need to keep trimmed, cut-free, and smelling nice down there. The Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0 also includes the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits. Why not putting deodorant on the smelliest part of your body? And yeah, that stinks. Speaking of sweaty and stinky, I'm thankful for their Crop Reviver. This product, along with the Crop Preserver, keeps you from sweating, smelling, and sticking. Hey, it's that time of year, right? Manscaped threw in two free gifts into their perfect package. A pair of high-performance Manscaped boxer briefs that'll keep you feeling fresh all day, and a travel shed bag to store all of your grooming goodies. You gotta have a shed for the tools, right? So, keep yourself clean and trimmed up. Now, get 20% off free shipping with code DIY at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. And use code DIY. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. Now, finally, let's get to the show.
Everybody stop what you're doing, please!
When it comes to remodeling and renovating your home, there is no better show on your radio. This is Around the House with Eric G.
Where's the hammer?
From your back fence to the sidewalk, Eric will tell you how to keep it all in tip-top shape while helping you save a buck while doing it. If you like DIY projects, it takes a lot of practice to get good at it, and Eric is here to guide the way.
Is it on the... Go up on the other floor. Somebody go up there and stop the hammering.
All that and more on the fastest 2 hours of home improvement radio.
These are the wrong plans. These are the old plans.
Oh. Welcome to...
Stop it! Stop
Around the House with Eric G.
Welcome back to Around the House with Eric G. This is where we talk home improvement every weekend. Thanks for joining us. Well, I got a special guest on the line here because I wanted to figure out why people are talking about moving to Texas, because I've got friends moving down there. People are bailing out of where I broadcast from here in the Pacific Northwest. I've got the godfather of Seattle radio, Kirby Wilbur, on the line. Welcome to Around the House, brother.
Thanks, Eric. I appreciate it very much. Thanks for having me.
Man, this is great. Well, I watched you kind of transition from radio broadcaster to Texas resident, and I was just curious. I wanted to ask you, why is everybody bailing out of the Pacific Northwest here and going to Texas?
How long is the show, Eric? 6-7 hours?
Right?
Well, let me tell you. I'm talking to you from my back porch. It's roughly 12:30 here, if I don't drop you, and it's 75 degrees and clear blue sky. It's April, 14th, somewhere in that range.
Yep.
So there's the weather now. We know it's going to get hot in the summer, and we have that really quick winter storm. But in general, the weather's pretty good. I think if you are a moderate or right of center or concerned about the radical shift in Seattle politics down here, you don't have that. You don't have the woke culture. You don't have the political correctness You go to church, they don't mock you. Own a gun, they don't mock you. Nicest people in the world, generally, and nothing against all my friends in the Northwest and my listeners who I love and adore and miss. But people down here are just super nice. They're super hospitable. Cost of living is cheaper. Overall, gas is cheaper. Food is cheaper. It's just a different lifestyle, different culture. My wife, Trina, says Texas is a state of mind. It's really hard to explain to you get here, but if you are one of those people who kind of fed up with the riots in Portland and Seattle every day and the lawlessness and the increasing size of government and taxation, and to be, to an extent, the weather, you know, 9 months of gray, 2 months of sun, and 1 month of who knows what, Texas is a place to come, especially if you're not and thinking about how far your nest egg is going to go. Housing significantly cheaper down here, Eric. For your audience, twice the house for half the price.
Wow.
Down here right now. And, you know, we've done some remodeling. We've done some things to our house, but we bought a house personally new. And it doesn't come close. The price we paid is so far below what we would have paid for this house up there. So you start adding everything together. I think Texas is a natural fit for a lot of people.
No kidding. Well, I've been watching. It's been interesting. You know, I listened to like the Joe Rogan podcast and some of those guys, and it is amazing how many people, including the Elon Musks of the world, are bailing out of the West Coast. I think that Austin is going to be, and I know that's a little bit different. That's kind of the lighter side of Texas politics, but if you know what I mean, it seems that everyone is moving out that way because, well, they've got the freedom to do what they do with their work, and they're not going to pay the price if they say something that's considered to be wrong out there, and they like the tax benefits.
Yeah. Now, there are liberal parts of Texas, but they're not really leftist, and I draw the distinction. Liberals, in my mind, are people on the left side of the spectrum, but still respect freedom of speech and still accept understanding and tolerance and differences of opinion. The left, which is much of what's in Seattle, like the Shama Thorne, they don't accept differences of opinion. If you disagree with them, then you're evil. And so you have Democrats and liberals in Texas, but they're not anywhere near as far left. And there's no state income tax here. You're about to get one in Washington, I think, through capital gains tax. The gas tax in Seattle is about to be $1 a gallon when the legislature gets done. And I just think people... It's a freer culture down here. So even people on the left know they can come down here and think and innovate and not face any kind of social obstacles, if you will. And take everything else together, the cheaper living. And to I got to tell you, it is exceeding expectations of that. We spent years studying and coming to Texas and studying Texas and thinking about where we want to live. And I've been down here now for 10 weeks. And it exceeds my expectations. It really does.
Nice. Yeah, I was looking at house prices down there. I think it was on your post on social media that you had shown up what a Seattle house costed versus a Fort Worth, Texas house costs. And it was shocking the difference between, you know, what's to turn around and take a $700,000 house in Seattle and to show what you can get in Texas with that, it's tenfold the house that you can get. It's amazing.
It is. It is. We sold our house in Redmond before moving down here, roughly $500 a square foot. Mm-hmm. The house we bought, which is a Rambler just like our house was in Redmond, was about $150 a foot. And the construction quality is similar. The features are similar. We have a slightly bigger yard here than we had up there. Neighborhoods are comparable, and you know that's a threefold difference in cost per square foot, and it's just especially for families who are looking for, you know, a four bedroom house, three bedroom house for kids to grow. You're talking $800,000-$900,000 in the general sale area. I just talked to a listener because I've been in touch with all my listeners who are thinking about moving to Texas. They have a split level in Kingsgate, split level. You know, north of Bothell, north of Juanita, south of Bothell, mm-hmm. average middle class neighborhood, 1,700 square feet, sold for $805,000, a split level. Okay, 1,750 square feet. And he listed it, by the way, at $625.
Wow.
It sold for $805. Our son, he just moved down here, oldest son, just moved from Monroe. He listed his house for $530. It's on about half an acre, nice neighborhood, about 1,800 square feet. He listed for $530. They sold it for $605. And this is north of the fairgrounds in Monroe, second day.
Wow.
So, you know, $75,000 over asking. The first offer was $50,000 over asking. It was the second offer they got. And it, where it stops, I don't know, but the average middle-class family is being priced out of housing. In fact, the average upper-middle-class family is being priced out of housing in the Seattle area. Where it stops, I don't know, but down here, and so for people, and they're building houses down here. Eric, you could come down here and never be out of business, okay? Because people are remodeling their homes, they're building new homes, construction. The only problem down here is some supply chain issues because, as you probably know, it's hard to get building materials now because of such demand and some other issues, supply chain issues. But it's hard to believe what's down here to actually hear and see it.
Yeah, I mean, if in my, you know, I live outside of Portland here, and you know, I'm in the metro area, and across the driveway, the flag lot behind me, they went in and bought this last year a $600,000 house on a less than quarter acre lot, tore it down, put a $1.5 million house on it, and they decided they didn't want to list it. The builder did, because it's just finished up now. They're just finishing up the last little bit on landscaping, but the price was going up. They decided to pull it off the market because they could get a extra $100,000 a month that it set on the market in listing price. So I think it's going to go up for 1.95 instead of the 1.5 because they just started building this on Labor Day last week. It's almost done, and this is just a spec house on a teardown lot, and it's going to be a $2 million house by the time they're done because I'm sure they'll have their own listing battle for that. And that's not affordable housing by any stretch of the means.
No. I will say, I think low interest rates make them more affordable. And the Fed has been keeping rates low artificially for reasons, you know, economic growth and not having to slow down and helping alleviate some of the misery and problems there. But you can't artificially hold interest rates down forever. And right now, 2.5-3% for a home mortgage, you can afford $1 million house. When the rates are 6% and 7%, it'd be much harder to afford that house, and the monthly payments would be astronomical. And people, it's going to put a, when it happens, if it happens, I think it will at next year. And the housing market is going to start to slide, and you're going to have a lot of people with, you know, $1 million houses. They're really right now in the current market worth $700,000, $600,000, and it's going to be a problem.
Yeah. Well, great example. I mean, if we get back to the Jimmy Carter era of double-digit mortgage rates, that's, you know, that would be a disaster for all of those homeowners because they're literally paying on a house with an adjustable mortgage that there's no way they're going to have the ability to pay for that.
Right. I was in appraiser back then. I was appraising like 70s, early 80s, and I know what it was like, and couldn't give houses away. There were builders that would leave a Mercedes in the garage as the bonus fee to buy their house, but you know, you had a 17% interest on your mortgage. People just simply couldn't afford that. And I don't know if it was that high, but when you're talking about 2-3%, even when I said 6-7%, which is historically where the interest rates are, at 6-7%, the historic average, it would still be devastating to housing. And so if you're up there and thinking about buying or selling, do it now. Do it now before this all comes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
because people won't be able to afford to buy houses. They'll need to remodel. They'll need to add. They'll need to renovate. And it'll keep folks like you really busy.
Exactly. Exactly.
It'll be cheaper to hire you to come in than to buy a new house.
Oh, it's shocking. You know, it's shocking how accurate that is. I mean, you know, I'm looking at it now saying, okay, you've got people out there that are putting their houses on the market. They know they're going for a bidding war. They don't have to do anything. My couple concerns that I have with the market out there, and just as a general comment on that, is one, people probably aren't insured enough on their own homes right now because there's no way that you could build it for what you insured it for last year.
Right. Right.
You know, you could be $100,000 or $200,000 off if you had a catastrophic loss to your house. But really what I'm seeing, which is bad for homeowners, is that you're seeing people putting offers in on houses that are either cash or ready to go stuff, and they're waiving the inspections or waiving all those things, and people are getting into homes that they don't realize the hidden issues that are there, and they're going to assume those on once they're closed into the house. And I think there's going to be some remodeling here for people that are just trying to maintain the house, not make it into their dream house from the thing that they just purchased.
There may be some surprises in the next couple of years, because you're right. What we're seeing down here, and I'm getting into my real estate license, so I'm involved in that down here. We're seeing a lot of people, and still in the Northwest, people I talk to, waiving inspections, waiving appraisals, because they've got cash or they've got a large pool of cash, large down payment. They're paying cash. They're waiving inspections. They're waiving appraisals. And I don't think people understand the purpose of the appraisal and the inspection is to protect the buyer from surprises. Mm-hmm. You know, not every buyer understands dry rot. Not every buyer understands settlement. Not every buyer understands bad roof. And these people, in many cases, I've been buying houses in the next couple of years, they're going to have bills in the thousands for renovation, repair, and upkeep that had they had that inspection, had they had that appraisal, they'd know about it and could prepare for it or find another house. But there are so few houses on the market, people are throwing it to the wind and saying, heck with it, I need a house, so I don't care.
Yeah, that desperation can sure cost you down the road in the long run, because all it takes is mold someplace or cracked foundation. You've got a $10,000 to $50,000 repair there that you didn't plan for. And if they are fully mortgaged on that house, that gets dangerous. Gets real dangerous.
That's right.
So
We're learning that we require inspections. You tell your buyer, get the inspection. Get the inspection. Doesn't matter. Get the inspection. You may think it's worth it. You may have the money. And it hesitates, but you got to get the inspection. We urge all people down here to do that, whatever they think.
Yeah, it's really smart to be doing that stuff and protect yourself. That way you know what to budget for, even if you've got the money for it. You want to know what's lying around the corner for your house. And so that's super important. Well, Kirby, what else are you seeing down there? I mean, it's interesting, you know. Up here, we run into, and this isn't a political show, and nor am I trying to make it one, but you can't help discuss the obvious things that happen here, where in the news every night, for instance, here, I'm in Portland, and, you know, it's like Star Trek, where I hit my phone in the morning and go, damage report, what police resource building burned down last night, or what happened downtown? Right. You guys just don't see that there, do you?
No, we don't. And there are some of those very same issues. I think Saturday was the National Black Lives Matter protest day. And there were protesters here in McKinney, the town we live in. But there was no violence. There was no overturning cars. There was no threatening people. It was the same weekend they had an arts fair in downtown McKinney. And there were thousands of people down there looking at kind of like a Junior Bellevue arts fair. And there was wine and beer around a good time, and there were a lot of police officers just keep ordering traffic. And the Black Lives Matter protest was right alongside the fair in the same area. No confrontation, no ugliness. It's just different down here. And I think part of it might be that people know that law enforcement in Texas doesn't mess around, that they wouldn't tolerate what's going on in Seattle and Portland, for instance. And I also think that the nature of people down here is such that their inclination is not to damage property. I mean, how can you protest the death of an innocent young black man by stealing from a T-Mobile or, you know, a Nike store? I mean, what does that do? Tearing apart businesses that in many cases are owned by people of color, how does that accomplish the goal? How does it accomplish your objective? And it's different here. There are issues, of course, there are issues of police conduct, there are issues of everything else, and they're in the paper a lot, they're talked about. But you don't have that inclination to violence, and I think part of it is that it wouldn't be tolerated, and part of it is it's just not part of the culture down here.
Yeah, and that's amazing. I mean, I was living in Seattle during the riots of WTO and, you know, and all the stuff back in the day, and, you know, it's... That was breaking news now, you know, back then, and now it's just kind of the normal news cycle on a West Coast city. And I think that's probably one of the main reasons. I mean, I'll be honest, my kids are adult and grown, but I would sure not want to be letting my elementary or, you know, middle school aged kid walking through, you know, one of the inner towns through the homeless, you know, campers and stuff just to get on the playground for school or hey, I mean, I grew up where the kids were out. We could come home by, if the streetlights were on, we knew we had to be home. And you can't do that these days in a metropolitan area just for safety of your children.
Yeah, there is. Here we're in McKinney, about 20 miles outside Dallas. I've seen one homeless person here on the streets asking for money. There are no tents. There are no camps. There's a homeless shelter here in McKinney that a lot of the churches work with. But here in McKinney, you don't see that. I think part of it is police wouldn't accept it, and the authorities wouldn't accept it. There is an issue of vagrancy and shoplifting in some of the downtown stores, if you talk to some of the downtown merchants. McKinney is a very small downtown. It's kind of like downtown Snohomish, if you're familiar with that.
Yep.
A lot of antique stores and restaurants and bars. And it's a very popular place. A lot of people hang out down there and eat down there and shop down there. And they've reported some increase in shoplifting and kind of people that shouldn't be there, but nothing like what you see in Seattle. Nothing in Portland. We drove through Portland on the way down here. Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's worse than Seattle in terms of homelessness and tents and on the side of I-5 on those grass strips and stuff. It's incredible, but not here. And I think part of it is it's not encouraged. Part of it is a lot of the churches are involved in helping these people. And there doesn't seem to be the attitude of, well, to be compassionate, just to leave them alone and let them live their life. That's not really compassion. You will never see, I don't think, a safe injection site talked about in Texas.
Yeah, it's interesting here in Portland. I moved down here, almost 10 years ago, and it was a really beautiful city. And now there's literally thousands of people living in blue tarp tents. And the environmental damage just on the side of the freeways is astounding. I mean, it would take them bulldozers and dump trucks. It would take them months just to clean up the side of the freeway. And you get into town and that same thing is in the streets. I mean, it's if it's a place where somebody could put a tent in a 3-foot mow strip downtown, there's tents there. And so many people, I feel bad for the hotels and the businesses in our downtown core. Everything's still boarded up. They say they're open for business, but I think this is where that downtown condo living is starting to feed what the prices are when you get out. Like, for instance, in Seattle, you get out into Snohomish and out into those areas where people just kind of kept them themselves and were quiet out there. Those are hot markets because people have to still keep their job, but they're just trying to get out of the core of downtown.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's where people move in, especially now that you have all these places like to work at home and remote work. It doesn't matter where you are. And I think you're going to see some people who are in condos and apartments in the central core say, you know, I can look for the money. I can get a house with acreage. Out in Snohomish, or maybe we want to have kids, or maybe we have kids, or maybe I want a horse, or maybe you want animals. And I think you'll start to see that move out that direction. And people will come back downtown, but I think it's going to fundamentally change. There is no way businesses are going to get everyone who worked remotely from home back to the office. I think a lot of people say, no, I'd rather work here as long as I'm productive, as long as I'm helping to make a profit, as long as I'm doing my job. There'll be resistance to getting, you know, back on the highway, or in town, an hour getting out, that kind of thing. And so downtowns are going to have a challenge, especially places like Seattle and Portland, who not only will have half empty office buildings, not only will have minimal lunch business and restaurant business during the evening, they have the visual unsightliness of homeless camps, if you will, needles, and everything else on the streets, and it's going to be tough for them to come back.
It is, and I spent a lot of time when I first moved down here, and this was this is not a political show, but I really wanted to see people getting help, and we had down here in Multnomah County, they had built up a prison, which was the Wapato Jail, that was going to be they had originally planned it to be kind of a for hire, you know, jail where Multnomah County could make some money off of it. Well, they built this thing and not a single inmate ever slept in this thing overnight. It sat here for 20 years as an unfinished facility. And
really?
Yeah, it was empty for 20 years, ready to go, but then no one ever stayed in it. And I fought to, you know, to really bring that into being a shelter that you could put in, you know, get people off of drugs, get the mental health care they need. And, mm-hmm. you know, it had a couple hundred beds that you could actually use it for something that would be positive. And the city and the county fought it. They put it up for auction, and Snitzer bought it. And finally, a group came up and they fought tooth and nail to get it. But a private group came up and now they're opening it up. They've been remodeling it. It's going to be a big shelter down here, but it's going to make a small dent. But it was ironic that the city was fighting to have that place torn down. It did not want it used for that. And this local group actually won the battle, and it's going to be good, but it's going to take, to get this turned around here, it's going to take a lot of people trying to help out this, you know, I bet you we've got 40 or 50,000 people that I've seen around, and it's hard to count, you know, living on the streets that we're going to have to do something here in the Northwest with in our area, and as well as Southern California. They've got a similar battle. Just because it's been ignored for so long, we've got to come up with a solution.
Yeah, and I think there's a hesitancy to compel people into treatment. And I've spent nights on the streets with the Union Gospel Mission in downtown Seattle. They got every night to help people, and I've gone out on ride-alongs with them, gone to these camps, met with these people. And a lot of them are people who lost their jobs and can't afford rent or shelter, comfortable, and found a way, you know, a niche, if you will, in this lifestyle. A lot of other people are simply mentally imbalanced and or drug addicted, and they don't know what's good for them. And it's not compassionate to allow people to roam the streets, a drunk, high, addicted, mentally ill, without giving them help. And I understand civil liberties, okay? People believe more in the Constitution than I do, but there has to be a line between individual civil liberties and compelling people to get help who need it. People who don't know they need help. The mentally ill don't know they're mentally ill. Addicted people oftentimes can't find services. We have to find a way, I think, to provide the services and to compel the really dangerous ones into treatment and get them off the streets, because it's not compassionate to let these people live the way they're living. Yeah. I don't think so. Not my definition of compassion.
No, I agree with you, man. I agree with you. And we've got to really do that. And it same comes down to, you know, Texas has done a really good job down there of keeping their housing prices manageable. You know, they're not putting in crazy regulation. I mean, I just had Institute for Justice on here a couple months ago talking about a Seattle couple that had a, you know, $100,000 fee on their house because the city of Seattle wanted to put on that homelessness fee onto this big project. And come on, it's crazy. You can't be doing that stuff.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that case. Now, in defense of Washington and Seattle, which I rarely come to defense of, but, you know, Texas is pretty flat and can really spread out, whereas there are mountains and lakes and sounds and that limit where Seattle can expand to. But all the more reason to have an understanding and not so strict building code, because builders will find a way to deal with that, work with that, to provide the housing if they're allowed to. And here, these houses are safe and they're adequate, but they're not over-regulated, and they build them very quickly. The permit process doesn't take all that long. And the housing is being demand here, which is what helps keep the prices down.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, if I wanted to pull a building permit for a new house in the city of Portland, I have a year wait to get that through the system.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if you're a big corporate builder, like a Pulte or one of the others, you might be able to afford that. But if you're an individual home builder or a contractor that builds 6 or 8 or 10 homes a year, that can be deadly for you. And it really diminishes the ability of the market and builders to respond to the need. And there's obviously a need. You can't repeal the laws of economics. You can try, but supply and demand is simply a law that can't be repealed. Yep. And you can try, but it won't work. And there is a difference down here in terms of attitude. And I got to tell you, I've dealt with the DMV. I've dealt with the county assessor. I've dealt with a lot of local tax people as we're dealing with getting settled. And, you know, you get an exemption on your house or a homestead exemption, which is evaluation. And I have never met a nicer, more cooperative group of civil servants in my life. And that's not personal. I mean, I'm not attacking anybody up there, but in terms of being helpful and in terms of bending over backwards to help you, in terms of being helpful, nicest bureaucrats in the world.
Yes. Nice. It took, in Portland, it took me, in Oregon here, it took me 9 months to get a simple title transfer done on my truck that I bought. Bought a 90s F-250. Took me 9 months from the day that I mailed it off to Salem, Oregon, to get plates and tabs and a title back. And absolutely incredible to go through that experience. And finally, I was just driving a truck around that had, you know, 9-month-old plates on it with no tabs, going, well, here's my receipt for mailing it off. If somebody harasses me, I guess I'm going to have to figure this out. But yeah, it's a 9-month wait to get tabs here and stuff in plates in the state of Oregon. And seems like you
got
things.
My new license plate.
Yeah.
2 days from here. I was my second day here. I thought, you know, if I have these Washington plates, people are going to blame me for what's going on. I think that I'm down in the Burke, Texas. So I went to the tax office, the county tax office, where you get your plates here, walked in with my title, and got my plates. And they have them right there, issued them. I walked out with them, and they have this great system here called MyPlate.com. They have about 490 different personalized plates you can get. And the shop to buy the plates is in the same office where you get your plates. So if you go to get your regular plates and say, you know, I really want something custom, they say, well, right over there. Walk over the desk, and they have, you know, like veterans plates, and they have plates for schools like SMU and Texas A&M and all of that. And it's just one-stop shopping. I have my new Texas plates in 2 days.
Nice. Except they didn't have your Texas Huskies plate, so did they?
No, they didn't. So I have my license plate for instead that says Washington Huskies. Yeah, that's cool. I have a
That's awesome. Well, Kirby, thanks for coming on today, brother. Kirby's out there in social media if you want to track him down, but he is doing his work out there, and you're doing this new career. I love it, man. It's great for somebody like me that's in radio. Watching you thrive doing something else is pretty inspiring. I love it.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I used to be an appraiser before I got into radio, so I kind of have a real estate background. And I just decided I wanted to get my license. And again, for listeners and friends of ours who are thinking about moving down here, help them if I can. I don't really want to create my own empire. I don't really want to list houses. I want to be here to help people from the Northwest who want to move down here. Because if I sell 6,000 a year, we're fine. I mean, we're okay as it is. I don't really have to do this, but I want to because I want to help people. And it's been great. Also, I'll be on KBI from time to time. I'm their fill-in guy. We just checked the technology last week, and I can actually be on KBI via my cell phone with broadcast quality. So we got that worked out.
Nice.
But, you know, Eric, anytime you want to come down and visit, you just let us know. You're more than welcome.
I will do it. Maybe I'll come down there, and we can do the show from there and talk more about it. So I appreciate it, brother. Thanks for coming on today.
Thanks, Eric, very much. You have a great day.
Thanks, Kirby. Well, Dane, I got a funny one for you now. I have to give Kirby a little bit of credit for getting me back into radio.
Yeah.
So years ago when Kirby was on Seattle Radio, I was up there and I had a buddy who was his executive producer on the show. And my band was playing a benefit show for flood victims. And we were playing for that because we had some really big floods at the time. And he got me on his show and we popped into the studio. We did an interview with Kirby and I went, man, I really like getting back into radio. I miss this. So I have to give Kirby a little credit because that one thing had really shifted my thought process of, I got to get back to doing radio. I had not done radio at that point for 15 years.
And you just kind of were doing the band thing? And
I was doing the band thing, working kitchen and bath, designing and managing construction projects. And that kind of wet the brain of going, hey, you
really like this.
This is your love, and you got to get back to this again. So I have to give Kirby a little credit of helping around the house of Larry G for inspiring me to get back to doing that. And, we had the band in there, and it was funny getting the band up for morning radio because I was the only one that was half awake, and we had a great time. But it was one of those things I just got to give him credit for. And thanks, for everybody, for tuning in to this little episode today of this because I just wanted to have a plain spoken conversation about people moving around the country for what they think, perceive, or believe are better circumstances.
Yeah.
And I can see it. We've got some big problems here in our area with affordable housing.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, I tell you what, if you're making a little bit of money, you're not buying a house.
Nope.
And as you know,
yep.
That's
I've
a problem.
I've never even looked into it.
Nope.
Has never even crossed my mind.
Not yet.
Well, not yet.
Mr. Millennial, you'll get there.
Yeah, we'll see.
I know. We all are at that point, but it's worse now than it ever has been.
My birthday's like a week away, man.
I know.
Getting
it.
Old.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We got to do a birthday celebration next week since you did it for me.
Oh, yeah. Well, anyway, just to remind you, I was born in 1989, Eric.
Yeah, that's when I graduated high school. So, yep. Thanks, kid.
Hey, you know, anything for you, bud.
All right, man. Well, thanks, everybody, for tuning in today because, you know, we've got some great interviews coming up. We're going to have some fun with this. And that music means it's time to go.
Into the show.
You got it. Well, I'm Eric G.
I'm Dane Vauder.
And you've been listening
to Around the House.
Around the House with Eric G. is produced by Designed by Eric G. in association with Salem Media and distributed nationally by the Sun Broadcast Group. All rights reserved. Copyright Designed by Eric G. We will be back next week. If you missed part of the show, check out the podcast of all of our shows at AroundTheHouseOnline.com. Remember, measure with a micrometer, mark with caulk, and cut with an axe. Thanks for listening to Around the House.
Hey, it's Eric G. from Around the House. Are you planning a decking or siding project this year? If you are, you've got to check out my friends at Millboard. Millboard is a completely different kind of composite decking and cladding that enhances outdoor spaces with enduring distinction. Hand-molded from the finest oak, it realistically mimics the natural grain and color of premium hardwood. If you're looking for something that doesn't look like plastic and instead real wood, check out Millboard.com. Make sure and check out that interview we did just a few weeks back. That's Millboard.com.